Hey, Alan, we should record some sports propaganda.
Hollywood, sports, everything is propaganda now.
Propaganda.
It's all propaganda.
Let's do it.
LeBron James, we love you, but propaganda. Welcome to another edition of Jedi and Germs on the Jazz, a weekly podcast brought to you by TornBySports.com. I'm Alan Zog, the Jedi. He's John English, the Germs guy. Hello, John.
Hello, Alan.
Good to be recording again. We skipped last week.
Yeah, you know, it's August. Stuff needs to be happening. Stuff actually is happening.
Yeah.
Let's start with Jeff Withey. Withey, is that how you say his name?
Your guess is as good as mine.
I actually haven't heard anyone say his name. I think it's Jeff Withey. And he's got a partial guaranteed contract. He was a second round pick 2 years ago. Played sparse minutes with the Pelicans. Became a free agent when the Pelicans signed, they've got Davis and Omer Asik and Alexis Ajinsa and Kendrick Perkins. They got plenty of centers on their team, so they don't really need another. I mean, I thought the Jazz had plenty of big man, but the signing of Jeff Withey, it seems like he would be an upgrade over Jack Cooley, and it also seems like this could point to Grant Jarrett getting waived. I think if they're bringing in Withey, it means that maybe they consider it worth 12th man on the bench and just waving Jarrett. How do you see it?
I don't know. You brought up an interesting point with Jack Cooley, and a few of the folks I've talked to were considering the same thing. I didn't realize Withey's was partially guaranteed like that. Cooley's is not guaranteed, right? I mean, we've already discussed that. So
yeah.
So if that's
Cooley's
the case,
is not guaranteed.
Yeah, and if that's the case, then it would make sense to move Cooley. I'm intrigued by this signing. I don't know why the Jazz felt the need to go after, you know, a 7-footer and sign him unless they saw something. I don't know. What this is a peculiar signing to me because until October comes around, I've always had this wait and see attitude about who really makes the roster and these guys they bring on. And so I was a little bit surprised to hear that he was partially guaranteed. And it's a mystery to me as to why they felt they needed to go out here and get another guy when you had potential guys on the roster like Cooley.
Hey, John, I see this as Jarrett getting waived. I also see it as Cooley probably getting cut. And I'm opposed to that because you know how I feel about Cooley. But what does this say about Plyce?
I don't know if it says much about Plyce. They gave him a 3-year contract. They're committed to him. This feels like a third center insurance policy. I think they want to have that third center just in case something happens. I still think Plyce is their second center. And so they just really want to feel good about that third center. And Withey is a guy who can block shots. He was blocking, I think I saw he was blocking like 5 a game at some point when he was in college. He was an early second round pick. He hasn't really been able to get much time where he's been, and that'll continue on the Jazz, quite honestly. But he does seem like he would be an upgrade over Cooley or Jarrett. And I think they just seem to be looking at any opportunity. If we can just get a 5% improvement here or there, they'll take it. They want to maximize their opportunities, even if it's a small step. They'd rather do a small step than no step.
Well, size wise, he's a bigger guy than Cooley is, right? He's got a few inches on Cooley, I thought.
Yeah. And even if you just look at like his per 36 numbers, he's twice the blocker that Cooley is. I mean, Cooley's he could be like a big power forward. I think Cooley's 6'9", whereas Withey is a 7-footer. So I think that factors into it. And Jarrett's 6'10", but he's a really thin guy. So he needed to show some kind of special skill. And up to this point, I didn't really know why they had such interest in Jarrett. I mean, he only played, what did he even play last year? He played like 30 minutes total last year, something like really small.
Enough that I don't remember.
Yeah, I'm going to pull it up. I think his totals are like, let's see. Okay, he played 51 minutes. He shot 7 of 26 on the season. I don't know. That didn't look that great. He shot 1 for 15 from 3.
Ew.
Oh, some of that. I forget he was on Oklahoma City for some of that.
But really, everything you're reading doesn't grab it.
Okay. Yeah, he played 26 total minutes on the Jazz in 3 games.
Right.
He's been one where I just felt like he was a throw-in. I was actually surprised to learn that he had that much guaranteed money. But maybe that just made the trade easier, and they're just doing the usual spin of, oh, no, we're interested in this guy, he has potential. But really, I mean, I think it doesn't – I think they're okay to waive the $1 million if they can get someone they actually have faith in. And Withy just looks like he would be a better player than Jarrett for those sporadic minutes.
Well, and even in the end – you know, Withy's probably not going to get any more than we saw that Jarrett got last year. Maybe by the end of the season, Withy has amassed, you know, 80 minutes, and maybe that's on the high side. Maybe we don't see him play it hardly at all. And you're right. Maybe it is just an insurance mark, and that's it.
Well, Withy got over 200 minutes last year. He only played 37 games, and I anticipate that. If he makes the team, I anticipate it'd be something like that. He would get more DMPs than he would play time. And he really can't expect to see much time on the floor unless one of the other bigs gets hurt.
Right.
Because they seem pretty set. You have Favors and Gobert. Power forward, you're probably going to have Booker as your second, and Lyles as your third, and it just depends how much minutes he gets. And then Plyce is going to be your backup for Gobert.
Right. So let's segue into our next topic. Devin brought attention to an article in Bleacher Report, and you read it. I read it. I think we're all in agreement, very well written, about Rudy Gobert.
Yeah. Yeah, it made the case on just how unique a player Rudy is and how we really have no idea what his ceiling is based on what we've seen so far and the improvement he's shown so far. And, you know, their comparison was, it's very similar to Serge Ibaka's third year. And even then he prefaces it by saying, you know, he started the whole year before that. So we're going to get our first year of Rudy starting the whole year. And it really is, it's almost like unprecedented. What is this player going to be like when he starts the whole year? Because the Jazz were so amazing on defense when he started, to go from the worst defense 2 years ago to the number one defense by the end of last year. You know, that's such a rare thing.
And the article goes to the fact that Rudy's just special. He really is. And there's a part of the article I want to go in and find. But while I am, Devin and I were talking off air earlier before you came on with us. We were talking about some of the comparisons it was talking about. Devin, we were talking about what some of the other players in NBA history. This isn't just – he's not just doing something special right now. It was interesting. One name that was brought up on the list – that has had a percentage rate of blocks that Rudy has is a former BYU Cougar, Sean Bradley, who blocked. I mean, he was a blocking machine when he got into the NBA. But
took him a while.
Yes. Oh, yeah. It definitely took him a while. But it was interesting to read some of the comparisons. Devin, I'm trying to remember some of the other names on that list.
Oh, there was Mutombo and Ibaka.
Elijah Wan.
Alonzo Mourning. Yeah.
And David Robinson.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, he's on a list up there with some elitists and guys who are some of the best this game has ever seen.
Well, the chart we're talking about is a season with a 7% block rate of over 2,000 minutes played. And there are only seven cases of that in history. And it's those seven guys. It's Robinson when he was 26, Mourning when he was 29, Ibaka when he was 23, Elijah Wan when he was 27, Mutombo when he was 27, Bradley when he was 28, and then Gobert when he was 22. So he's the youngest player to achieve that.
That's just insane.
Yeah.
And it was, like I said, I'm trying to find the phrase. There was a phrase I read in there that just caught me. And, well, I know there's a phrase that caught Devin because he tweeted at Gobert about it.
Hey, you're a unicorn.
He never got back to me either. I was kind of bummed out.
But they considered
there was
it.
Something else that he said in the article. It pointed out that Rudy doesn't even need all the length that he has to be as good as he is on defense because he's so good at anticipating, which I thought was an interesting observation.
No, Well, okay, so, and I was reading, I'm going to just read this part because this is one of the phrases that caught my attention. Said, despite spending 2/3 of the season as a reserve, Gobert was Utah's very best player last year, amassing a team-high 9.3 win shares. Ibaka's team had already become good gradually, most on the strength of other players. Gobert was the reason his team got good overnight. There's no point in continuing to look. Gobert has no historical precedent.
Yep.
The other thing that caught my attention, the article goes further into saying, where does this leave the Jazz going forward? And the guy even went as far as to say, look, we don't know, because he almost calls Rudy Gobert's performance an anomaly, because it's like you don't have any you have a half a season to look at. You don't have enough data to look at that's going to say the Jazz are going to be this good, because in the end his comment is you just don't know. That's what's so crazy about where the Jazz can go. They can be so good, but you just don't know. And he even mentioned that even if Gobert was a percentage less of a player this year, the Jazz are still going to be one of the best defensive teams in the NBA.
Yeah.
I think my favorite part was when he talked about where Gobert was drafted. Now, it says in the article, remember, the Denver Nuggets selected Rudy with the 27th pick of the 2013 draft. Then traded him to the Jazz for Eric Green and Cash. Thanks, by the way.
Yep.
Now, when you compare that to other guys that were on that chart, which those were the top, I think, top eight. I believe there were 26 seasons that would fit into that, but Rudy had the number 3 win share. But when you look at the other guys that were on that list, let me just see what we had here. Bradley was the
Robinson
second overall.
Was number 1. Yeah.
Yeah. Camby, Alonzo Mourning, and Dikembe Mutombo each went 4th in their draft classes. So, I mean, 27th. And we're comparing him to some of the great centers of all time. That blows my mind, especially at 22.
I want to give credit to this article. The writer's name is Grant Hughes. I'll be honest, I don't read a lot of Bleacher Report, so I haven't read a lot of Grant's, but he's a featured NBA writer on Bleacher Report. Did a fantastic job on this. And folks, if when you're listening to this, take some time to go out and find this article, because it's worth a read. Devin tweeted it yesterday. I retweeted what he said. But if you the article is titled "The Stifle Tower: Rudy Gobert's Ascent is Unlike Any We've Seen Before," it's worth a read. That's all I got to say.
Yeah, Grant, well done. Well done if you listen to this.
We hope sure he does.
He's going to. I'm tweeting him. I just followed him.
Did you really?
Grant's going to follow Jedi and Germs. We're going to have more followers.
You just followed him? I guess I need to go out and find him and follow him.
Yeah, I think everyone should go follow this guy. It's at GT underscore Hughes. H-U-G-H-E-S. Good follow. I think I've only been here for a few seconds.
We just gave Mr. Grant Hughes a little love on this little corner niche of ours.
He's gonna get like 4 more followers tomorrow.
So John, just how good can Rudy be this year? I'm curious. 19 wins to end the season last year. We've talked already about our predictions this year. How many wins is Rudy worth this year? Is that 9.3 win share stay that high? Does it come down? I mean, where does Rudy sit at the end of this season?
Oh, it probably stays close to that, if not tied with or even better. I mean, who really knows? One thing I kind of wanted to segue from that article is the ESPN summer rankings, the summer forecasts.
Yes.
And they did hashtag ESPN forecast or NBA forecast, where they just asked a bunch of NBA ESPN staffers their opinions, and they just kind of crowdsourced and put together their projections. And those projections wound up coming to a 40-42 record for the Jazz, finishing ninth. Which I understand that Dante Exum is hurt, but I still can't comprehend the Jazz only winning 2 more games next year compared to last year.
Me either. No, I and that when you tweeted that to me today, because I didn't keep up on that hashtag, but when you DM'd me about that today, I'm right there with you. Why 2 wins? I think the Jazz get more than that this year. I find it hard to believe, and I don't know. I'd have to read some of the reasons why all those guys decided that, because, you know, each one's got to have their breakdown and reason as to why they think the Jazz are only going to be 2 wins better. But the Jazz won half of their games from February on, from February 1st on, which 19-10. That's all I got to say. 19-10 after you started the season with 19 wins. How can you say they're not going to win at least 42, 43, 44 games, not 40?
Well, that's the thing. I don't know how many of them were taking into consideration that Cantor was your starter the first half of the year. They look at just how bad the first half of the year was. I mean, the first half of last year was just as bad as the first half of 2 years before.
Right.
But and they also might say toward the end of the season, well, there's some fluff wins there because some teams weren't trying. Some teams are resting guys.
And yet,
you know, whatever excuses you want.
And yet there's a 5-game, 6-game stretch at the end of the season where the Jazz played without Gordon Hayward. I mean, so you have a fluff schedule, but you also had a period or a stretch there where the Jazz went without arguably their best player. So 19 wins could have fluctuated to 23 wins after that stretch. I mean, you're right. I get that. You could argue either direction. I'm almost ready to say, you know what? The first half of last season, that first stretch, just knock that out. You can't go from 30th in the league to first in the league in defense and say, oh, it was schedule. That's what it was. It was the schedule. And nor can you, nor do I believe you can say, well, the Jazz had the best defense in the NBA because of the schedule, and they're not going to be that good this year, so we're going to only give them 40 wins. Sorry, I don't buy that reasoning.
Well, here's how they did forecast. They had Warriors at number one with 60 wins, which is seven less than the year before, which I actually think is kind of a fair market correction.
Okay.
Spurs are number two at 57. Rockets. Oh, I should say Spurs finished with 55 last year. So they're saying a two-game improvement with LaMarcus Aldridge added. The Rockets and Clippers, they both have at 56, which is what they were at last year too. So they have both of them going the exact same. They have the Thunder going to 55, which is very believable with since they had Durant gone for almost the whole time last year.
Yes.
Memphis, they had at 51, which is actually a bit of a dip. Memphis always seems to be the good Western Conference team that doesn't quite get the respect. They had 55 last year. Now they're projecting at 51 by ESPN.
I still think that could be accurate. Not to take away any love from Memphis, but I wouldn't disagree with that.
Yeah, the like every year, the Western playoff teams are going to be rough.
Yeah.
For number seven, they have the New Orleans Pelicans at 47 wins, which is two better than last year. And they have they've upgraded their coach. So sure. Right. Yeah. Believable.
Yep.
They have the Mavericks getting to 41 as the eighth seed. That's nine games worse than last year. You know, they kind of blew up their team by trading for Rondo and then him being a mess. And they missed out on DeAndre Jordan in the offseason. 41, I think that might be fair. Because I like their starting lineup. They just have no bench. But to put the Jazz at ninth at 40... I can't see that. That's taking away a lot of wins overall from the West this next year than they had last year. I just see the eighth seed as no worse than at least 42 wins.
You know why see that, John?
Because it hasn't happened in 15 years.
Well, because they're wrong. The fact is, they're wrong.
Yeah.
Oh no, and I don't know. I guess I could see that as well. 40, and that's. I think they're pretty spot on with most of their projections. I think the Jazz is the one where we disagree. I mean, I kind of had a feeling or thought as you were reading it, without having read any of this, that Dallas would be that pick for them to be the eighth seed. And I don't agree with the fact that Dallas will be an eighth seed. But I do agree with them getting to 41 wins. I can see that feasible. I think the discrepancy really is in the wins that they've predicted the Jazz will get, because that will decide between them or Dallas getting that eighth seed. Is how many wins are they gonna get to? And I think all of three of us have come to an agreement here that we thought right there in about the mid 40s, didn't we?
Yeah, yeah. I was thinking they'd get to 45, 47 wins. Once Exum got hurt, maybe that drops you a couple games. If I remember right, Kevin Pelton had originally projected after the Exum injury that the Jazz would go 42 and 40.
Yes, he did, and we talked about that, and I don't know if I agree with that either. I think you're giving a little too much emphasis on and credit to Exum. Not that I want to discredit Exum, because I do like him and I do think there's promise, but I don't know that he's worth that many wins. Is he really? I especially when you read articles like what we just did and people breaking things down, the guy that's really worth the win shares right now is Rudy Gobert. And the defense is better because of Rudy Gobert as your anchor. So can you interchange the point guard position without losing too much? I believe you can, especially when you weren't getting much offensively out of the point guard position anyway. So you're really just giving up defense. So no, we've hashed this thing for 3 weeks now. We have, and it, you know, there's no sense in rehashing it. I just don't think that losing Exum is worth 5-6 games. I don't believe that.
Yeah, if we're going there, it all depends on what Trey's like this year.
Yeah. No, I agree with that. So, other thoughts?
That's my thing. I actually don't have a problem with any of what they said about the West, except for the Jazz. I'd say just give them five more wins.
What about
the eighth seed?
What about that Rookie of the Year discussion? Because I did notice that had some interesting names on it.
On ESPN?
Yeah, on that ESPN hashtag. I'm trying to think of who they predicted as. I've seen one report where the prediction was that Jabari Parker wins it now because he can play a full year. But who was the other name that was in there? I can't remember.
Dang it. He actually played some games, so he couldn't be rookie this coming year.
And I didn't think that was the case. But I'm trying to think of who the pick was to win the Rookie of the Year because I just saw it. And
it was Towns.
That's right,
Carl Anthony Towns.
Is that a fair assessment? You think he wins it?
Yeah, I see it quite likely. He'll be playing with Wiggins, and the T-Wolves can't be as bad as they were last year, so he'll have plenty of chance to showcase. Hard to say. I mean, Moutier's gonna be in Denver. He's replacing Ty Lawson. He's gonna have plenty of opportunity. They had Okafor as second, and the Sixers at some point got to win something. And Okafor would be the guy to turn that around for them. Their forecast is pretty much the lottery. It's a slightly different order, but their order is Towns, Okafor, Moutier, Russell, and Winslow for their top five. And that sounds about right in that order.
And I'm just going to say this, outside of the Utah Jazz and outside of your standard Western Conference, elite teams, I might pick my favorite team to watch this year or exciting team to watch might be Minnesota.
Yeah, if they have Rubio healthy all year and he has guys like Wiggins and Towns to dish to, and their other young guys have been showing improvement. Shabazz Muhammad had a great leap in year two.
Yes, he did.
There's plenty to get excited about Minnesota. I mean,
and LaVine. Don't forget LaVine.
Oh, and LaVine. Yeah, I mean Minnesota. They won't be competing for playoffs next year, but the year after, they definitely will be.
But my point is, they're going to be a fun group to watch as long as they're healthy. They won't be fighting for a playoff spot, but they've got athleticism. They've got so much talent on that team. They're going to be very fun to watch. From an NBA standpoint.
Yeah.
So
I think the thing with Minnesota is you're looking at a team that's going to grow kind of like what you saw Oklahoma City do with Durant and Westbrook. I think Wiggins and Towns, sky's the limit up there.
You know what? That's a good comparison. That's a good thought process right there, because you have to remember Seattle before they moved to Oklahoma City, they pick up Durant. They had a veteran Ray Allen on the team at the time, who eventually was traded a year or two later. It was pretty quick, but they had a good core group that they brought in, and then they built it from the ground up from there, and it was fun to watch them grow. So I that's not a bad comparison thought there.
Yeah, I agree. They had Durant, and then they had Jeff Green, and they had Westbrook, and then they got Harden, and they traded Jeff Green for some pieces, and then just instantly took off.
Yep. All right. Well, any other thoughts you wanted to throw this way? Maybe we'll just cut this one a little short tonight, but is there anything else you wanted to talk about?
No, that's good for the NBA.
Okay. I want to take a second myself and give a shout out. I was talking with a good friend, Cameron, from Utah Man Podcast a little bit earlier this evening. He DM'd me. He's like, "I'm your biggest fan." and yes, Cameron, you are. And we love you, dude. But I just want to give a shout out to him. Guys, you're listening to us. If you're a Ute fan or a college football fan, that's a good podcast to listen to. Cameron and the guys have got something going on there. So I just want to, everybody look out for Utah Man Podcast, brought to you by TornBySports.com. They're a great podcast, a great group. they deserve a listen. I really enjoy what they've got going on there. I just have to because he and I were giving each other crap earlier. So it's a good little love. Throw out some love.
And check out all the content on tornbysports.com.
Nice. A little shameless plug there. Very nice.
Thanks.
John, you have any shout-outs you want to give? We don't do that enough on this show to give some thoughts and shout-outs to anybody.
On the spot, I can't think of any.
Okay.
But thanks to all our listeners. Everyone who follows me, shout-out to all of them.
Yes.
Each and everyone.
And everybody that follows the unpaid intern, too. Big shout-out. Absolutely. The intern is very grateful for that. So no, we appreciate it, guys. We appreciate everybody listening in. We've loved some of the feedback we got from people. We appreciate more. Leave some reviews on iTunes. We can't stress that enough. And we'd love to take your questions, your thoughts on the show, and you know, we'll read your reviews too on the show because we enjoy it. So, parting words, anybody, everybody. Did you want to talk about any movies or anything else there, John? We haven't even talked about that tonight.
Well, last one I saw was Straight Outta Compton.
How was it?
It was really good. It was a really energetic biopic. Really enjoyed it at the time. Since then, I did a little more reading on the actual history of the NWA. So there's, you know, that natural controversy. There were some things at the time I was aware of that the movie just kind of skipped over. They skipped over a lot of their misogyny. They skipped over, you know, their violence against women, and maybe even in some respects they kind of softened the image of the NWA, which is really supposed to be dangerous. But just taking it as a movie. And not like sitting there worried just about how accurate it is, but just taking it as a movie. It's really entertaining. It's exciting the whole way through. The three central guys are really good, especially Jason Mitchell as Eazy-E. I thought he did a great job. And it really kind of made it felt really timely to have that movie come out in this era of Black Lives Matter. And that just the increase in video of police brutality. And it made me understand what they were singing about then, even if when they came out, you know, I was in high school and they just seemed like they swore a lot in rap songs. What's the big deal?
Right.
But now I kind of get where they were coming from and what they were trying to say. And so for that, it's really the right movie at the right time.
Yeah. No, and I've okay. On a side note, I've enjoyed the funny memes that have been popping out over Facebook and Twitter over the last month or so as a result of it too. People using Straight Outta and adding their own little.
Yeah, that was genius marketing by the filmmakers to do that.
Fantastic.
Have your own Straight Outta generator.
It was awesome. Well, cool. I haven't seen it, and I haven't seen anything since the last time we talked. So movies have taken a little bit of a quiet backseat for me for the last couple weeks. So, but yeah, there you go, guys. Go check out Straight Outta Compton. And I've heard a lot of really good things about it as well. So, and for anybody listening, you don't have to be a fan of NWA or even know who they are to enjoy this movie. Am I right, John?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. And there's some funny stuff in there. I loved it when Snoop Dogg showed up. I just cracked up.
Seriously, they threw Snoop Dogg into it? That's awesome.
Yeah, they get this young. Yeah, I mean, Snoop Dogg joins up around that time. And just the actor playing him and the way he spoke, I just thought it was hilarious. There's a lot of, you know, hip hop guys from the 90s who show up.
And
there could have been more. It could have easily been a 4-hour movie.
Did they have any cameo appearances by the original members? Was Dre in the movie at all or anything like that?
I don't remember any of that.
Okay.
And I'm actually kind of glad. I think that would have just been distracting.
Probably. I could see that. So, all right. There you have it. Go ahead, Devin.
Alan, I think we're straight out of time.
Yeah, I think so too. All right, folks. Well done.
I saw what you did there.
Thanks.
All right. Well, we want to thank you all for listening to another edition of Jedi and Germs. It has been a slow summer, so we haven't had a lot of topics. We talk when it comes, but guys, NBA season right around the corner, and we'll have lots to talk about as we approach it. But we want to thank you all for joining us each and every week that we do produce a show, and thank you for listening. Thank you for your feedback. You can find us on Facebook, Jedi and Germs, on Twitter, Jedi and Germs, at Germs Guy, at Jedi Zog, and at Torn by Devin. And as always, we can't thank Devin enough for the masterful job that he does on this podcast. So thank you all for listening, and we'll talk to you soon. John, take us out.
Bye, everybody.